Did Bob McCowan just say what I think he said? You can rewind Primetime Sports Podcast when you subscribe at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan, on demand. Sports addiction. Sports obsession. You can't diagnose it as a problem issue when your career is sports. Bob McCowan and Primetime Sports. Now on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
We don't need no education.
That's for sure.
We don't.
It is Tuesday, February 9th, 2016, and this is Primetime Sports on your radio, on your television, from the Sportsnet Radio and Television Networks. I'm Bob McCowan. John Shannon will join me later, along with Richard Deitch, Jim Ralph, Jeff Blair, Kostya Kennedy, a professor at NYU, and Doug McLean of the NHL on Sportsnet. All coming up on the program. The issue today, of course, to some extent, is the Leafs trade with the Ottawa Senators. Mike Zeisberger was bitching and complaining about not being invited to come in. And now we know why, or maybe more accurately, he knows why. Can't read? What's your problem, Z?
Number one, this shouldn't shock you.
It doesn't at all.
Number two... I went to the same high school as you, which doesn't say a lot about the educational system from my end.
Yeah, well, at least I was paying attention.
And number three, yes, I butchered the text. And, you know, after months of bitching, moaning, and complaining, now we know why I'm persona non grata. But
well, you're not persona non grata, but you're working your way in that direction.
I'm out of there as quick as Dion, I guess.
Yeah, well, you'll be required to bring a suitable gift the next time you come, if in fact we ever invite you.
I have this friend that makes has his own winery.
Yeah.
Would you maybe like a bottle or two?
I have many bottles, but
okay. If
you want to go buy one, I'll be happy to say.
I'm sure you will.
Here's what I...
For those green fees, Bob.
Yeah. Well,
by the way, despite the weather today, might not be that far off.
I hope not. God, I pray it's not. So this trade today, everybody is saying it's a 9-player deal. Here's who's involved. Milan Mihalik, Colin Greening, Tobias Lindberg, Jared Cowan, Dion Phaneuf, Cody Donaghy, Casey Bailey, Matt Fratton, Ryan Rupert, and a draft pick. That's 10. Why is this being called a 9-player deal? There's 10 guys in this deal. One of them, we don't know their name. But there's 10 guys in it, aren't there?
Well, obviously they can't read just like me. And by the way...
Well, they can't count.
When we say players, how many of these guys are actually, let's narrow it down. How many of these guys are even going to be impact players?
Oh, none. None. I mean, Lindberg is the only guy we don't know much about.
Yeah.
And he's an interesting pick. I mean,
one thing
but
I'd
we
like
don't
to
know
say about him, Bob. I do believe that he played in Oshawa.
He did.
For DJ Smith, the Leafs assistant coach.
He did.
Who was the coach of the Oshawa Generals. So,
correct.
You know, you got to think that when they were going over their list of prospects, that played a role in it, you know, better the enemy you know.
So the Maple Leafs, you would think, would have liked to have gotten a couple of young players, at least with a future here. Lindberg, I guess, could be that guy. A second-round pick is... you know, it's like salad without dressing. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's okay. You can consume it, but I mean, it's not probably going to be very tasty. Or was this a case of dumping salary? I mean, because while it's the Leafs actually take on some salary in the initial stages, there are contracts that are expiring in this deal.
Yeah, and I think those are, you know, when you look at what their plan is a couple years down the road, I think. I'm pretty sure that those contracts will be off the books. The way I look at this, Bob, is that, you know, like a year ago, if we would have been talking last February at this time and you would have looked and three contracts in particular, okay? You had Phil Kessel, okay, who with it, and all these deals were signed in 2013. Yeah, David. Let's start. David Clarkson gets signed that summer. I believe it was 7 years, $37.5 million. So $5.25 million cap hit, and this guy has 26 points in 118 games as a Leaf. And you're just thinking, well, you know, there's a bad contract you're saddled with. Then on the eve, then you think about Phil Kessel, who on the eve of the 2013 season gets paid $64 million over 8 years. That's a cap hit of $8 million. And we all saw how that whole experiment went south. He was part of that Salutegate incident, the leadership core, very questionable. His production went down. And then on December 31st, 2013, they signed Phaneuf to a seven-year $49 million deal, which means he had he had a bigger cap hit than Drew Doughty of the Kings at that time. So you're looking at those three contracts and saying, you know what, this team is screwed moving forward, because if they want, they can't win with these guys, they won't be able to move those contracts. So how are you gonna how can you have a real true rebuild with those three guys in the mix? And somehow in the last 12 months, the Maple Leafs have rid themselves of David Clarkson's contract, Phil Kessel's contract, and Dion Phaneuf's contract. And my thinking overall has always been, if you're going to say you're going to rebuild, if you're going to blow it up, then do it properly, blow the whole thing up. And I think that this is an indication of what they've done. And I would have never, ever thought that they could move those, you know, those three contracts, let alone in the space of a year.
What is Ottawa getting in Phaneuf? It's really difficult to assess his real impact on a team that's as poor as the Toronto Maple Leafs and has been as poor as this team has been since he arrived. He is clearly not the kind of guy who can raise the bar for all others around him. But I don't blame him. He's not the reason why the Maple Leafs have been bad. How do you assess him?
When I look at it, Bob, I think this is a much better situation for him. First of all, you know, the way that Brian Burke slapped the C on him right away, when he came to Toronto. I mean, I just thought that put him behind the eight ball from the get-go. I mean, you've got to prove that you're captain-type material. He hadn't even, you know, he had played maybe a month and a half of hockey, 2 months of hockey as a Maple Leaf. And I understand the optics of it, and I understand that Burke thought, oh, maybe this will give this guy confidence. But I just thought that was a move that doomed him to fail. I think that the fact that he's in Ottawa now, he's not the captain, and perhaps more importantly, he doesn't have to be a number one defenseman, which I never thought he was. But that's the role he played in Toronto. I think that with Erik Karlsson obviously in Ottawa gobbling up those minutes, I think that Dion, you know, he'll get some power play time, maybe on the second unit. Maybe he lines up on the point next to Karlsson. But we've seen this year under Mike Babcock that Dion Phaneuf is a more effective player when he gets less minutes as opposed to more minutes. And I think because of the lesser role that he'll play in Ottawa, and the fact that he's not the captain, the fact that he's not the number one defenseman, at least they're creating an environment where, you know, he can be as effective as maybe he possibly can be. I am a little surprised that Ottawa would go for this. I understand that they are cleaning out some salary there, but I mean, Dion still got, what, 4 or 5 years remaining at a $7 million cap hit? That's a big chunk for a team that Erik Karlsson a couple weeks ago was quoted as saying is a budget team. Unquote.
Well, I'll buy that, except if you are going for it, what exactly did they give up that they will have to find a replacement for? And the answer really is nobody. There's really nobody in this deal that the Toronto Maple Leafs are acquiring who was at all impactful for the Ottawa Senators. Not one guy. Mihalik is, you know, I don't know, 10th year, 12th year in the league. He was a high draft choice a long time ago, but never really produced. I think he was the sixth overall pick by San Jose.
Yeah, he was part of the, I believe, in part of that Heatley
deal. He was part of the Heatley deal, yeah. But he's never really been the guy that they think they thought he could be, and there's no way he's going to turn into that now in his, you know, in his 30s. Greening and Cowan are guys they wanted to get rid of, you know, non-impact players. And Tobias Lindbergh is a minor leaguer.
Yeah.
So, you know, they give up nothing that impacts their team immediately, and they gain Phaneuf.
Yes.
I don't know what Phaneuf is. I don't have any, you know, the whole sense of Phaneuf was he was going to be a great offensive defenseman.
Yeah.
And he had one of those years in Calgary and hasn't had one since. So assessing him as a defensive player is always with the eye, but he can score some points. So, I mean, look, they got him. Would he have been the number one choice? I don't know. Maybe he's the I don't doubt he's the number one choice among defensemen who you could get and who you could get with a contract that extends beyond this year. So the only thing that's surprising to me is that, you know, that $7 million a year is, you know, that Ottawa is going to pick that up because, you know, they've got guys with big contracts there and they're a sub-budget team.
Well, it's exactly like you said. I mean, I understand that's a piece of it. You know, the Senators seem to have been in a time warp where the rest of the league is having a hard time scoring goals, and the Senators seem to think it's the 1980s again. Score last week, I think, against Pittsburgh was 6-5. And, you know, that's reminiscent of an era of hockey of 20, 30 years ago. They put it up another six spot against the Leafs on Saturday, although, you know, you can insert pun here.
Yeah.
But, you know, is Dion Phaneuf going to be the answer?
No.
See, I understand what you're saying, that they're not giving up much. But obviously they think that he is serviceable over the long term. But that's why I just think, you know, you must be seeing something in Dion Phaneuf that you really like. But because to be paying this guy $7 million a year
on a sub-cap team.
You know, exactly. If you're going for it this year, okay, are you telling me that you can't trade a second rounder for somebody of equitable value that maybe isn't making as much money? So this is obviously something that they're looking for or at in the long term as well as the short term. And I got to say, I was a little surprised. Not that, well, first of all, that the you know, there's a new sheriff in town in Lou Lamoriello when the Leafs and the Senators are making trades.
Yeah, no kidding, huh?
Like, what's next? Dogs and cats frolicking together? Like,
yeah, I know.
You know?
Listen.
Are they going to make a trade with the Habs next?
I guess anything is now possible. Right? We got to get out of here. Your day is done.
Yes, thank you. I will go back to Churchill and take up those remedial reading classes.
Well, good boy. And check on the time, too.
Okay, Bob. Talk to you soon.
KZ. Mike Zeisberger of the Toronto Sun, who was scheduled to be the co-host in studio and misread the email, apparently, and thought he was on at 5 o'clock. But no, Shannon will be in here at 5, so I'm running solo today. Here's our friend Richard Deitch of Sports Illustrated. This is a rare opportunity for you. You have me all to yourself, Deitch.
You know, I was told right before I went on from Matt that it's going to be sort of mano a mano, if you will.
Yeah.
He sort of was hyping this, like Ali Frazier, Thrill in Manila, Soviets of 1980 versus the scrappy American team of 1980. So he's got me pumped up for the segment.
Well, that makes one of us anyway. Somebody ought to be excited.
I just want you to know, if I'm the co-host, I probably would have made the right deck. I feel like at least I would have come through for you on that. I wouldn't have misread the email.
Well, you were 5 for 5. I want you to know when you were in here. So your record is perfect.
I'm the Rogers Hornsby of Rogers.
You are indeed. So here's what I Here's what I thought about the Super Bowl going in. Not the game. Who cares about the game? I certainly didn't. I said, you know, there's the Carolina Panthers who probably don't have five fans outside the state of Carolina. The Denver Broncos, while historically a pretty good team who've made numerous Super Bowl appearances and won games, I never got the sense that they had a real national following. This is not a New York, a Chicago, an L.A., a Dallas, even an historic team like New England, Pittsburgh, like those kinds of franchises. So I thought, they're not going to have a very good number for this Super Bowl. How the hell did they draw the numbers that they did?
You know, that's an interesting observation and question by you because, you know, on the one hand, I agree with you. They're not the historic NFL teams like the Cowboys and the Packers and the New York teams, which will obviously draw viewers based on city, based on tradition. But, and here's where I would say the X factor comes in, Bob, is that you do have the reigning MVP in Cam Newton, who is, a very exciting player for a young group of fans in particular. 20-somethings, I think, really like Cam Newton, identify with his swagger. And then you had a big storyline with, you know, arguably the most famous player in the league or, you know, number two or three behind Tom Brady, however you rate it, likely going out in his last game, either win or lose. So CBS did get lucky in that they had two pretty big pre-built storylines. One, can Cam Newton sort of cement himself as the next generation great in the league or current generation great? And then obviously one of the league's most storied players in his logical last game, could he go out the way John Elway did? So I think they had a good story going in.
All right, but let me stop you there. Let me stop you there.
Sure.
I had around 35 people at my house for the Super Bowl. So there's maybe 10 kids and then the rest are split among the adults. So let's say there's 10 guys because the women sit in the kitchen and eat food and drink wine, right? That's what they do.
What is it, 1943?
Yeah.
All right, go on.
Yeah. So, and the game is on in my family room and the game is on in the theater down in the basement. And there's some people in the theater and there's some people upstairs. I guarantee you 8 of the 10 people that were watching that game at my house didn't know anything about Cam Newton and knew very little about Peyton Manning. They weren't big football fans. Guys who watch casually, occasionally, here and there. But that wasn't the storyline for any of them. And when you draw 110 million people average per minute, or total audience, there are a significant number of people watching that game that don't know the storylines that you and I know and that the real football fan knows. Now, and I'm not being critical of the people who watch the Super Bowl. It's just the way it is. People watch the Super Bowl. Some high percentage of the audience watches one game a year and they watch the Super Bowl. And they don't know the teams and they don't know the players and they really don't know much about anything. But they watch because it's what you do on that Sunday in February. So I'm shocked. The only thing that doesn't surprise me is if you look at the top 7 Super Bowls in terms of ratings, they've all come since Super Bowl 44.
Right.
So, you got 44, 45, 46, 47, 48, 49, and 50. Those are the top 7. So clearly the game itself now has reached a point where I guess it doesn't matter who's in it. Your thoughts?
Well, it's definitely ratings. It's ratings proof. No one would argue against
clearly.
That. You're always going to draw over 100 million, I think, if the Bob McCowans played the Richard Deitches in the Super Bowl. But I would say this. I think some of your group's an anomaly in terms of Peyton Manning because I really do think that even a casual sports fan has probably heard of him just because of his cross-sport appeal, his commercialism.
Yeah, but do they know enough about him to care to sit down and watch the game?
It's a good question. Listen, the one thing you can definitely, I think, make a pretty educated guess on is that there has to be at least 30 to 40 million people who that's the only football game they watch all year.
That's my point.
If you look at the conference championships, which draw, let's say, 50 plus million, maybe inching on 60 million in the States if it's like an incredible game, and the Super Bowl is going to draw, over 110, and let's figure that there's, you know, 10 more million football fans who watch the game. So then you're looking at, you know, you're looking at 40 million, 30 million who are really just one-time people who are interested in the commercials, the halftime show,
right,
going to parties, just the pageantry of the game. But again, I would submit that I think CBS had a lot going for it heading in because they did have, you know, the biggest star currently of the game, the most famous or second most famous player in the league coming in. They had Super Bowls. If you're and you know, this does, Bob, get to your point about how good the ratings have been. You know, because I wrote about this yesterday. The game itself, we've been really spoiled the last 8 years. We've had essentially six great games, including some games that have come down to the wire. So I think you also go into this game watching, you know, hey, the Super Bowl has been so great the last couple of years. I got to check it out because it always goes down to the wire. The game turned out to be a dud. I mean, it was really almost an unwatchable game.
Yeah, you bet.
But I think a lot of people came to the game because they're used to, or they've been used to, just great games and great games that finish late.
Here's the thing that's even more intriguing to me. And I don't know statistically how many people watch the game on a laptop, desktop, tablet, or telephone. I can only assume that almost all of them did not have access to their normal television set. But then again, I've seen people sit in a room full of TVs and watch a game on a 2-inch screen. This to me is complete and utter insanity and a demonstration that our society is going in the toilet and that Donald Trump will be the next president of the United States. These things all seem to go together.
You can't say that to an American with kids, that you're just going to end up depressing me tonight. That's not fair.
Well, I mean, these things seem all to be intertwined. But here is the true statement. Last year, 2.5 million idiots watched the Super Bowl on some sort of non-television. This year, 3.96 million people did the same thing. Please explain to me how this is even possible. Not everybody was at work at 6:30 Eastern time on a Sunday night, which is the only explanation that I can come up with.
Here's the explanation. There are a group of 20-somethings, maybe even under 20, who have never gotten cable in their lives. They are called cord nevers, meaning they've never subscribed to cable. How do they watch their entertainment video? They watch it through laptop. CBS made the game available through streaming. And so you're going to have a couple million people who are watching the Super Bowl on a laptop, on an iPad, on a mobile device. And I would probably say you have a couple hundred thousand people who, you know, you're going to call them crazy, but they have the TV on and they're also checking the game out on their laptop as they check out, you know, whatever else they're doing, surfing on the web, because they are probably so addicted to their device that that's the only way they can watch the game. But those numbers are going to keep going up.
Oh, I know they are.
More and more people who do not get cable, more and more 20-somethings who are used to watching sports on their computer screen. And so I would be stunned if next year's number isn't, you know, 4.5 million. And what the TV networks want to do, obviously, is they want to figure out a way to make revenue on the digital-only product. CBS this year, first time ever, they sold the commercials that ran on over-the-air television also ran online. So my guess is that they were probably able to charge those who bought into the over-the-air broadcast some cash for the online presentation.
You think, maybe? Yeah. I'm thinking, yeah, that's probably how that worked. Now, and it also raises the issue. We had a story earlier this week that the National Football League is looking to potentially sell the internet rights to some of their broadcasts, maybe Thursday nights as a starting point, and that Google and maybe App, somebody, I don't know who the hell is interested in it. YouTube? I don't know. In any event,
Apple TV.
Is it Apple TV? So, and I, yeah, and I looked at that and I said, really? I mean, you know, but I guess this is it, huh? This is the next wave. You know, the last bastion of cable television seems to be sporting events. You can now watch any show you want whenever you want to watch it, and most of them without commercials. But you can't, that's not how you watch sports. It's not how anybody watches sports. But now all of a sudden, you're going to have that option.
Right. Here's what I would say to you. Before you pack up the house and go underground and decide society is totally done.
Yeah, I think it is.
I would say that, yeah, I would submit to you that keep in mind that the Thursday night package just went to NBC and CBS for a ton of money, and these additional streaming rights are going to go for far less, and they're going to be seen by far less people.
No, I understand that.
When it comes to the NFL, over-the-air television is going to remain the dominant player in both our lifetimes. That's not going to change. The digital numbers will continue to go up, but that is the one sport I can guarantee you that is not going to go all streaming over the next 30, 40 years. But the NFL, in their incredible ATM wisdom, takes existing inventory and figures out a way to make more money on it. So they basically, there's no more new games. All these guys are doing is just bringing in another partner. And basically, as you know, all these businesses line up for sheep, like sheep, to get any kind of connection to the NFL. So they will get more money out of the Googles and the Apples and the Yahoos for the same existing product. And quite frankly, Bob, a lot of times pretty horrible games. But yet these companies will pony up because they want to be in business with the NFL.
You wrote a piece analyzing the CBS coverage of the game. And you and I have discussed Phil Simms previously, and you have confessed, I believe I'm accurate, that you're not a fan of Simms?
I'm not as down on him as it seems like everybody in the States is.
Well, everybody
uneven
is.
Uneven at best. Uneven at best would be how I would describe him.
And then Mike Carey, the rules analyst, comes on and says at the beginning, the first replay that we have, it's going to be overturned, and of course he's wrong. Now, I think he actually was right. I have no idea what the rules guys actually saw that led them to believe that was not a complete pass. I have no way of knowing that, and of course the NFL won't tell you. But I believe it was the last time Mike Carey even appeared on the broadcast, wasn't he?
Correct. Mike Carey is somewhere in Halifax now being put away in a television prison. We've never seen him since the first quarter of the NFL.
He's gone.
First of all, the CBS PR people are not happy with me because obviously I call the broadcast out, and I think rightfully so. It was, you expect the Super Bowl broadcast to be the best broadcast of the year, and CBS, in my opinion, failed to provide you with enough replays on some very key plays, including penalties. The audio, I don't know if you got this at your party, Bob, but the audio was off. We actually heard a lot of times the truck counting down commercials, which is just...
Well, you know what I didn't hear? I'll tell you what I've heard really distinctly in past Super Bowls. You know, I have one of those surround sound systems, and the two back speakers almost exclusively are devoted during a sporting event to crowd noise. And when there's... I've been surprised in the past... When something happens on the field and I hear a crowd noise behind me, it scares the hell out of me. There was none of that on Sunday. I don't know whether that was deliberate or what.
I think the booth had audio issues throughout. I think the replay choices were way off. Phil Simms' commentary, once again, it's oftentimes confusing. And, you know, one thing, again, Phil Simms, in a pretty crucial part of the game, said Cam Newton threw the ball too hard for receiver Ted Ginn, and that's why he didn't catch it. There was no replay to either back up Phil's, I would say, curious assessment or to make the claim that Phil was off on that. But, you know, that's the kind of stuff as a viewer that in the Super Bowl you have to have. So I thought the broadcast was really subpar. I'm not one who bashes Mike Carey because I kind of think that job should be you as the former ref should make a decision on what you think happened on the field. Be authoritative about it, which Carey often isn't, and give us your take. The problem is that job is now judged on, did you correctly predict what the refs will do? And Mike Carey, literally, he's like 1 for 53 in the last 2 years. He never gets that right. And then he's been, it's almost like sport now on social media where Mike Carey comes on and you kind of mock and predict how he's going to get something wrong, and inevitably he gets something wrong. So it's... You know, that in itself is sort of playing on top of itself. And I'll tell you, listen, here's the one reason you know that CBS executives know all this, because every time they talk to reporters like me who cover this stuff, they make it a point to reemphasize why Mike is there, what he should really be judged by, and how social media criticism is incredibly unfair and hurtful. So when the executives are starting to point that out, you know that they're paying attention to this and they know how the general public feels.
See, the only thing is, again, I don't think he was wrong. I think he was right. It should have been overturned.
Agreed.
The problem that I have is that the networks, and especially CBS, are so in bed with the National Football League, they are they will not criticize anything that goes on. I mean, you know, they all of them, Nance, Kerry, Sims, all said it's a catch. I agreed. We saw lots of replays. We saw it clearly. In my opinion, and in yours, it was a catch. NFL ruled it no catch. And 1 second after that, they moved on. No explanation, no inquisition, no questioning, no criticism of the call. Did anybody say that is a bad, bad call? No.
No. Yeah. Hey, listen.
That's what bugs me about these broadcasts.
It should bug you. The game broadcast of the NFL is like a political campaign for
100%
for a candidate. They're essentially like the Carvilles and Stephanopoulos of the world. I agree with you. The only time you may get some really hardcore criticism, if it ever happens, would be the pregame show. And even there, I find that it's, for the most part, very surface and very sort of still flag-waving for the league. The only time this year I saw the CBS crew sort of call out something that really demanded to be called out, and that was Nance and Sims in that Cincinnati-Pittsburgh game, which essentially was like professional wrestling by the end, where they called it out and said, this is just kind of a disgrace. The refs do not have control of this game. People are getting hurt. It's a joke. That was the only time all year I've seen that. But I'm totally with you. No game broadcaster ever really has thoughtful, long discussions of concussions or CTE and stuff like that. And there's a reason for that. The league officials are listening. They know that they're going to get a call if they go into this. And they're partners in the industry.
They are partners. That is the word. Yes. That's right.
They're all in the same Big Brother house.
That's right.
Dinner together. That's really what it comes down to. Their rights holders are partners, and that's the deal.
We got to get out of here, but I thought that was one of the worst halftime shows. I don't know. It was a bad halftime show. I mean, the choreography was pretty good, and the camera work was really interesting. I thought that was good. I didn't like the performers. I'm not a fan of any of them, really. And Bruno Mars is okay, but the other two, eh. Maybe that's my take.
The one thing I would say is that, you know, I respect Beyonce and Coldplay for sure. Can I just say this? I think, Bob, we're going to agree on this. We both agree that the Star Spangled Banner by Lady Gaga was unbelievably great.
Pretty good. It wasn't as good as Whitney Houston.
But you know, that's like saying, you know,
something's
not as good as Gretzky.
No, I know. You're right. And I like Gaga, you know, and it was good.
That was a great performance. But no one's going to get to Whitney. It's like, it's like comparing somebody to Sophia Loren or Rita Hayworth. You know, it's you're not going to get there, but she came close to me.
Who's going to be the first artist to do the national anthem with choreography? Like, you know, with 50 background dancers and singers and, you know, things like that.
Well, you know, the NFL, as always, as you know, tends to go conservative. That's why Lady Gaga was a surprise. But, you know, if they had their druthers, Springsteen would do everything.
Well, you see,
perfect guy for the Super Bowl.
Yeah, and see, you know, they'll go all Hollywood with a halftime show. But when it comes to the anthem, you know, there's this level of we must respect the anthem. So everybody's got to stand in attention and put your hand over your heart and all that stuff. And I'm not a big believer in any of that.
How about we get the Canadian anthem, too, which is a cool anthem. Let's get both out there.
Oh, God, no. I mean, it's bad. They played God Bless America, too, you know? I mean, how many anthems do need?
I'm just pandering.
Honest to God. Enough with the anthems.
O Canada is a much better anthem than Star Spangled.
Are you old enough to remember when they used to play the national anthem after the last movie in a theater?
No.
I swear to God, this is true. Like, if you went to the last movie of the night in a movie theater, they played the national anthem. And I can't tell you how many times I ran out of the theater before the closing credits just to get out before that. Because if you're in the theater when the anthem plays, you go, oh, God, I got to stop and stand now. You know? Not that there's any rule and you can't get arrested for walking out, but I just felt like I got to get out of here before the anthem. And that's how I now feel about all anthems. Enough.
Today that anthem would be sponsored by Papa John's if it was in the theater.
Good. And Papa John should say, today we're not going to have the anthem. Buy a pizza. Kickoff. Let's go. Start the game. I got to go. We'll see you soon. Thank you, Deitch.
Good chat with you, Bob.
Richard Deitch of Sports Illustrated. Jim Ralph will join us next. We'll get his take on this hockey trade. Are we going to do all the hockey trade the whole day? It's not that interesting. It's one guy. One guy and a bunch of people named who? And there's 10, not 9. Count. This is Primetime on the Sportsnet Radio and Television Network.
This ain't like when you're at a game and sign up for a credit card just to get the prize and then you immediately cancel the credit card. Because there's no prize when you sign up for our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Now, more of Bob McCowan and Primetime Sports.
Before the hour. Haven't heard that for a while. I like that song. Is it John Cougar? John Mellencamp? John Cougar Mellencamp? Or Prince? It's one of those names. Yeah, like Morosi. You can call me Ray or you can call me Jay. I'm really into this anthem thing. This anthem thing has got me fired up. The mayor of Toronto, John Tory, is coming on the program tomorrow. He's going to, you know, try and blow up all the balloons on the NBA All-Star game, which, okay, it's a big deal. But they're going to play the anthem, and they're going to play two anthems before the game. I don't think we should play any anthems. It's like tax. Jim Ralph is with us, radio analyst of the Toronto Maple Leafs. Ralphie, you know the history of taxes, income taxes?
No,
like in the First World War, countries needed money to support the war effort, and so they said we need you to kick in some money because we got to win this war. And
that sounds smart.
Yeah, so everybody went, oh, okay, and so they said when the war is over, the tax will be done. Well, so they taxed all these people, and people sent in their money, and they went, holy crap, this is pretty good. So the war ended, then they just kind of went.
Well, then they probably said, as soon as we fix this road,
yeah,
be no more taxes.
Exactly. And then now the income tax, personal income tax at the top level in this country is 52.5%, give or take a half a percent. More than half of your dollars are going to the government. It started out as a temporary thing in the war. This is another thing that pisses me off.
Did we win the war?
Yeah, we eked out a victory.
Well, there should be something in it for us then.
There was no, there was overtime, I think.
There was a shootout.
I was going to say that, and then I didn't want to go there, but I knew you would. So here's the other thing. I'm just filled with things that are ticking me off today. How many players in the trade today?
Nine?
Ten. There are 10 players in the trade. You're just saying nine because somebody said nine. Why? Because there's 9 guys with names and 1 guy with no name, and that's the draft choice. But he's a guy. We don't know who he is. We don't know how good he is. We don't know where he's playing. But he's a guy. That's 10. Why don't we call it a 10-player trade? Answer that.
Well, we have to wait.
No, there's 10 guys in the trade. Count them up. There's this guy, this guy, this guy, this guy, and a draft choice. And for this guy, this guy, this guy, this guy, this guy. That's 10.
See, in the American way, we always called him Freddie Charles because it was always down as FC, future considerations.
Right.
So future considerations, Freddie Charles. We gave a name to him, which was Freddie Charles.
Right. Were you ever a Freddie Charles?
Yeah.
Were you?
Yeah, and it wasn't really for anybody's future, and there wasn't a lot of consideration. But
well, we know you didn't have much of one, but
I was a tack on. I was like that tax that you wanted to go away.
Yeah,
never did.
Temporary measure. When the war's over, no more tax.
Well, yeah. Well, the war eventually ended on my career, so
I'm blaming John Torrey. I can't wait till he comes on tomorrow. I'm going to blame him for this.
Yeah, broadcaster too.
Yeah. Well, yeah, he was the boss here. He was the boss here at Rogers when I first met him. And he was a commissioner of the Canadian Football League. You remember that?
That's right, yeah.
Yeah, for a few years, $1 a year, and he said they never paid him.
Yeah. Well, as soon as the Don Valley Parkway is done to the Gardner.
Yeah, you think things are bad in the CFL now? Back in the day, they couldn't even pay the commissioner $1 a year. So is this trade even worth talking about? I mean, I guess Ottawa gets something and gives up virtually nothing that they, like nothing irreplaceable. I mean, the Leafs don't get anything really that interesting, do they?
No, except, and I was a little surprised, Mike Babcock this morning uttered the words cap space. That, you know, it gives us more cap space.
Well, next year it does. Next year and beyond. Well,
oh, yeah.
This year it doesn't. Yeah.
Or at the end of the season it does.
Yeah, at the end of the year, yeah.
So, you know, you're saying, okay, well, is that for William Nylander in 3 or 4 years? Or, you know, or is...
Well, yeah, what are you going to do with it?
Is this sort of sliding into part of the rebuild is we're going to make a splash in the offseason? I mean, that's... I just find it interesting that... not that they're removing the core, which Phil Kessel was the first part, Dion Phaneuf is the second part, and not saying that those guys individually were responsible for the collapses from Game 7 in Boston to last year from...
No, they weren't.
On. But they were part of the core. And you can understand why they're trying to dismantle that and rebuild the core. I get that. But how they're going to do it is, do you make a splash in the free agent market?
I don't know.
And hopefully the Nylanders and the kids turn out to be great supporting actors for a couple of years.
Only got a couple of minutes, but if Stamkos is on the market, if you're Toronto, do you take a run at him? Or does he not fit the timeline?
Well, I don't think him alone. I think Bobcat, there's got to be a couple of other significant pieces you've got to bring in with him. Otherwise, you probably waste, you know, 4 or 5 years, 4 or 5 of the best years of his career.
Yeah, that's what I think.
Yeah, potentially, while you're still in the phase of rebuild.
So if you go with Stamkos, you almost expedite or force yourself to pick up the pace in your rebuild, and we've seen that movie before.
Yeah, and I believe that absolutely 100%. And I, it was like the Gilmore trade turned things around in '93, but Wendell was already here, and then Andrejczyk came in. You know, it wasn't a rebuild. They made a number of moves to took a chance that Podvin would be better than Grant Fuhrer. So
yeah.
There were a number of moves under Cliff Fletcher where, like you said, it expedited any kind of rebuild.
Yeah, right? I know. Well, I know, and it worked. I mean, they didn't get to the Stanley Cup final, but. They had a good hockey team.
Yeah,
but I
agree with you. I think if Stamkos is part of the plan, then probably the plan that we were led to believe that was in place has been altered.
Right. I got to get out of here. I'm out of time. It's always lovely having you.
Thing goes.
Yeah, I'll say hello for you.
Yeah, that'll help you.
See you, Ralphie boy.
Thanks, Bobcat.
Jim Ralph, radio analyst of the Toronto Maple Leafs, and a funny, funny guy. Jeff Blair will join us. He's the star of the Jeff Blair Show, starring Jeff Blair. He'll be in studio because he has nothing else to do. I can't remember the last time I came into this building and Jeff Blair wasn't sitting in it. I don't think he has anywhere to go. I don't think he's homeless. But I don't know why he doesn't go home. Kostya Kennedy of Sports Illustrated is a professor at NYU. He did some research recently on both hitters and pitchers in the postseason and how we can predict their performance on the big stage. And Doug McLean of the NHL on Sportsnet, if you haven't had enough analysis of this 10-player trade, we're going to give you more coming up on Primetime.